This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. This year's race for the North Carolina Supreme Court carries with it the potential for a significant political shift. Wake County Superior Court Judge Mike Morgan is a registered Democrat, and he is fighting to win a seat against incumbent Justice Bob Edmonds, who is a registered Republican. If Morgan succeeds, he will tip the political scale, securing a 4-3 Democratic majority on the court. That flips the balance. If that happens, Judge Mike Morgan joins me in the studio now. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, and good to be here with you and your listeners.
Thank you very much. Before I get started, I just want to point out that we did speak with your opponent, Justice Bob Edmonds, on this program 2 days ago. That conversation is available at our website, stateofthings.org. So in debates with your opponent, you have often pointed to and your criticism of what you say is the politicization of the Supreme Court. Why do you say that?
I say that because there has been an unfortunate relationship between politics and some of the decisions that have been rendered by the court, and looking at some that have gotten quite a bit of attention, which have caused consternation, is the redistricting opinion that was written by my opponent, which declared that the legislative districts as drawn by the conservative-led legislature were, in his eyes, constitutional, but yet they were later determined to be unconstitutional. So that is one certainly that has gotten a great deal of attention. Another one is the school voucher case. That's one wherein my opponent sided with the majority and decided that public funds, which are earmarked for public education, could be utilized for private educational institutions. Those are matters that have been passed upon and approved by the conservative-controlled legislature, and in lockstep with that, there's been a perception that the Supreme Court has fallen in line with that, in effect, rubber stamping, and that's been a real concern in terms of the perception of the court, especially as my opponent represents that he is a, quote, conservative judge, and having a conservative-led legislature and he billing himself as a conservative justice, therein lies some concerns for the perception here.
What do you make of the fact that that same court overturned the bill that would have taken away a teacher benefit, teacher tenure? The legislature voted to take away that benefit. The governor approved and signed that bill that would have taken away teacher tenure. And that same Supreme Court said, no, that's unconstitutional. Can't do that.
Well, that worked out, thankfully. But as the saying goes, where I come from, even a broke clock is right twice a day. Fact is, I'm glad they got that one right. But the fact is, too many have gone wrong. And when there's a perception that there is a political relationship between any of the branches of government, there's supposed to be the separation of powers with which the citizenry can feel safe and secure that it is intact, legislative, executive, and judicial. And when it appears as though those that are billing themselves to have a certain political proclivity or political bent, as my opponent does, and then decisions appear to be in line with politically held views, that causes concern. Perception sometimes becomes reality, and we shouldn't expect the citizens to have to rely on separating the two. Indeed, they should always feel confident that such is the case.
Well, let's talk about the perception of impropriety. The voter ID law, of course, is under court challenge right now. It came to you and as a district court judge. You didn't recuse yourself, and you were criticized because, after all, you're running for election. Here is a law that the plaintiffs say deliberately advantages the Republicans over their Democratic challenger. You're running for office. You should have recused yourself from that case.
Well, what I did, Mr. Stagio, is to do my due diligence. I take my ethical responsibility seriously. When this race was placed on the ballot before I even filed for this seat, what I did was I checked with the Judicial Standards Commission to determine if, in fact, I could ethically be a candidate for North Carolina Supreme Court and still ethically preside over the voter ID case. And I did get a written opinion from Judicial Standards, from an executive director, that said that there would be no impropriety ethically in terms of continuing to be a judge on the state voter ID case, because while the voter ID case impacted voters, it did not impact me as a potential candidate. So in terms of that criticism that I got, you know, there's the old saying, where there's smoke, there's fire. There were some who have political views that would favor my opponent. They tried to make it seem as though there was fire where there was the smoke they created, where really it was a manufactured dry ice machine. There was no fire. The matter is, I was purely ethical and responsible, and that's why I did not recuse myself.
This is the first time you're running for a seat on the North Carolina Supreme Court. How do you think, and why do you think you're qualified?
Well, I'm the better qualified of the two that are running for this seat currently, because I've got the quantity of experience, having served over the course of three judgeships over the course of the last 27 years, 11 and a half current years as a Wake County Superior Court judge, 10 and a half years prior to that as a Wake County District Court judge, and 5 years prior to that as a state administrative law judge. In doing so, over the course of those three judgeships, I've been appointed, I've been elected, I've been reelected, I've gotten great scores from my peers of the bench and bar that are on my website, www.judgemikemorgan.com. Also, I have been a teacher in the judicial classroom, in that I educate my peer group, fellow judges, how to be better judges. I have been on the faculty of the National Judicial College, which is the preeminent judicial educational institution in our country. I've been teaching judges for the last 24 consecutive years how to be better judges. In doing that, I've been doing a pretty good job, because I was voted to get their highest honor, the National Teacher of the Year. But in addition to all of that, what gives me an unusually unprecedented skill set is the fact that while I've got that quantity of experience and that academic experience, also I know what the ills, the strengths, the weaknesses, the great points of our society, because I've been very active in a myriad of community thrusts, programs, and projects. I'm often in the community speaking, being a part through leadership opportunities, trying to make society better. I know intimately what goes on in society. These aren't just cases in the Supreme Court that have numbers on them. These are real people. These are real businesses. These are real organizations that have matters that need to be addressed, and I don't just look at them idly. I look at them with sensitivity.
Do you think there's anything that needs to change in the state Supreme Court, and would you bring that change if you were elected?
Well, I bring change in the fact that I know how to take off my robe and get out into the community and shore up people's views of the justice system. In doing so, judges are allowed to educate, and I've done much to make sure that I get out and educate folks on the way the system operates throughout the North Carolina court system. I think that's one of the strengths that I bring, and thankfully I've been complimented in giving my personal time after hours to go out and talk to folks, be it church groups, youth groups, senior citizen groups, all kinds of senior or other types of groups, in an effort to make sure that folks understand what the court system is and, in effect, demystify the process so that folks have a greater deal of confidence in their judicial system.
What is it that the Supreme Court does? What should we know about the Supreme Court that maybe we don't?
The Supreme Court is the highest state court that we have in our great state of North Carolina. It reviews any and all decisions that would come from the lower three courts, the district court, the superior court, and the court of appeals. Any matters can go up on appeal to the North Carolina Supreme Court. In doing so, what the North Carolina Supreme Court does, it is the last statement on what the status of the law is in North Carolina when it comes to certain kinds of issues. Also, as society continues to evolve and change with the rapidity of how things work in our society, it also sets precedent as our laws need to continue to adapt, whether it's the legislature passing new laws. Then we get facts and circumstances that have never been seen. The state Supreme Court will declare what the law is as applied to that particular kind of situation, therefore contributing and continuing to have a growing body of law. So the Supreme Court gives the lower courts direction in deciding cases, and also publishes to the general community what the law is, and to understand what precedent is and how the law applies to facts and circumstances in our society.
So given the importance of this court, and you've talked about the dangers of it becoming politicized, but the fact is, if you're elected, the majority simply shifts, and instead of the Republicans having control, the Democrats would have control, but you would still have some political or implications of politics being involved in the Supreme Court. How would it change if we just elected a Democrat and changed the balance of power?
Well, first of all, I hold myself out as being fair and impartial. I don't have a political ideology. I don't espouse a political ideology. I happen to be registered as a Democrat. My opponent happens to be registered as a Republican. But the difference is, while I represent myself, though a registered Democrat, as being fair and impartial, espousing no political ideology, my opponent takes the opposite way of going about his campaign. He is a Republican, but he espouses a political ideology within being a Republican. I have no problems with him having a party affiliation, nor I, because folks expect that, and they tend to identify with candidates based upon party affiliation. But to identify a political ideology and to have that emblazoned on one's yard signs, no matter what it is, conservative, progressive, liberal, or anything else that one wants to label himself or herself, it's wrong to have a political ideology and somehow target ahead of time that there's going to be a view of a case through a certain colored lens. I look at cases through a clear lens.
Let me ask you what examples you've seen of that. For instance, the direct expression of an ideology or tipping or in any way giving a sense of how he might rule on a case.
Again, perception often becomes reality. Fact, my opponent puts on his yard signs that he is a, quote, conservative judge, unquote. He writes the opinion that upholds the law passed by a conservative-leaning legislature, which is later declared to be unconstitutional. The legislature passes a law that allows school vouchers by way of private funds to go to public funds. Again, a conservative view. When you have a conservative judge, as he bills himself, upholding legislation that is led by conservatives in terms of it being passed, it's hard to get past the legitimacy as to whether or not the case law is indeed properly generated if you have to first consider that there were labels that were involved with folks that were involved in those two different branches of government.
And you're talking about legislation that was indeed overturned by higher courts.
Yes, it was.
Supreme Court did rule that states may prohibit judicial candidates from soliciting campaign donations. Chief Justice John Roberts said that the state may assure its people that judges will apply the law without fear or favor. That came as a surprise from the Supreme Court, allowing states to regulate this kind, in fact, prohibit judicial candidates from soliciting campaign funds. This state hasn't done it. Do you think we should?
Yes. I believe that public financing should return to judicial elections. It's quite unfortunate that those that were in authority would decide that those that were in a better position politically to raise great amounts of money to fund judicial campaigns found that it was appropriate to take the ceiling off and to allow all sorts of monies to come in and remove the public financing ceiling. My opponent certainly has been a beneficiary of that. For example, during the primary election season, he was the beneficiary of $450,000 in a TV ad, about half of which came from the Koch brothers, clearly outside of North Carolina. But yet, because that kind of money was allowed to be invested in his campaign, that gave him a great source of strength in his candidacy. But while it gives those kinds of candidates strength, it gives our citizens pause as to determine whether or not these great amounts of monies that come into our judicial system for election purposes makes them wonder what kind of interest do these outsiders have in our judge races and what do they expect in return for their investment. Again, going back to what I've said, Mr. Stasio, the aspect about the fact that perception becomes reality, and when you have folks that bill themselves as conservatives upholding conservative legislation later declared unconstitutional, that's a problem.
Outside money and outside interests have certainly, and that is to say outside the state, have certainly shown great interest in local and statewide races. That is interest on both sides for both parties. What about popular interest? Do you think the citizenry is paying enough attention to these down-ballot races, particularly judicial races?
Well, I think the fact that this is the sole seat on our highest court certainly has made a heightened awareness among our citizenry, and that's a good thing. The differences between my opponent and me are relatively stark in terms of how he views how this seat should be and how I view how this seat should be. And I believe because of that and only one seat being available, and it does indeed in some folks' views tip the court from a registration of 4-3 Republican being in the majority right now to the registrations of there being more Democrats 4-3. That's what itself engenders a lot of the attention, and I think that's a good thing because anything that raises the attention of our citizenry in terms of their votes, as well as to be an educational opportunity for them to know that judges are indeed elected and to have some study concerning the courts and the candidates that offer themselves, that's a positive for everybody.
Federal courts have found this legislature and governor racially discriminated both in voter ID law and in redistricting, the governor not part of the redistricting. When you see, you as a Supreme Court justice, if you were to have that seat, these decisions have been made. They're not finally adjudicated, but at the moment, the legislature and governor have been their legislation has been considered racially discriminatory. Can you take that into account? How do you or do you filter that knowledge about other legislation if different legislation were to come to you on questions of racial discrimination?
Well, I respect the law. I've taken an oath, and that oath is to be fair and impartial and apply the law to the facts wherever it may happen to take me. I do not allow any aspects of my personal views to creep into my legal decisions. And so whatever the law may be, I can allow myself to detach myself from what comes before me. I happen to be an African-American male. I do happen to feel as though diversity strengthens our society. Indeed, if I happen to be elected to the state Supreme Court, I'd be the only African-American male presence on that high court. In terms of looking at the breadth and depth and beauty of the diversity that North Carolina has, certainly I would add a voice, which has been missing for a long time, because indeed we can't change who we are. But that's a perspective that I add. That's not a perspective upon which I rely in terms of applying the law to the facts. So regardless of what decision factors may go into the kinds of cases such as the one you just brought up, the fact is I would apply the law to the facts evenly because that's what I'm duty bound to do.
Well, I want to thank you for being on our program today, Wake County Superior Court Judge Mike Morgan. Judge Morgan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
He's running to win the seat in North Carolina's A seat, I should say, North Carolina's Supreme Court against incumbent Justice Bob Edmonds. We did speak with Justice Morgan's opponent, Justice Edmonds, 2 days ago, and you can hear that conversation at our website, stateofthings.org. And we want to remind you, North Carolina residents, early voting starts today, and you can find the nearest polling station to you in your county at our website. We will link to it, and you can find out how you can vote today. Early voting begins. Just ahead, journalist Toni Tipton Martin talks about her book, The Jemima Code, next on The State of Things.